Session number 12661, Mr. Jim Ray, reel 25.
Mr. Ray, reel 25. We're talking about your arrival at Bombay. I believe that you were talking to your colonel just before you got there. Do you want to tell us that story?
Yes, we on open deck and leaning on the rails, you see, and the colonel was beside me, and I said, "Over there, sir," I said, "that point on that prominence there, that's the meteorological office there," I said. "Down below, there are two big naval guns. Now they are looked after by the Royal Artillery. They are the gunners for that point. It's protection to the harbour." "Oh," he said. "Ah," I said, "you must have been here before." I said, "Yes, sir. I was in here before the war. "Oh, were you?" I said, "Yes, sir." I said, "Now." I said, "I was at Calabar Barracks and for quite a while." And I said, "Now we're approaching that. There's the gateway of India." And I said, "The docks are a bit further down from the gateway." And I said, "That big building behind, as you can see, it looks like a magnificent building." I said, "That's the Taj Mahal Hotel." "Oh," I said, "yes." And he said, "Oh, yes, you do know this place, and it isn't familiar to you." I said, "Oh, no, sir." I said, I was there when the Viceroy of India retired, Lord Willingham, and at the gateway of India, we were a guard of honour when he landed off his ship, and." Lord Linlithgow, he took over as Viceroy when Willingdon retired. "Oh, yeah, very good, yeah." And then we pulled into the docks and we went off and we disembarked in parties. We went down on the docks and we managed to get a brew of tea and something to eat before we got it to our certain number of carriages, you see. And they were very rough carriages, Peter. They were more everything was wood inside, you know, wooden forms and seats and a rough table that you could pull out and put it on a stand, you see, with a hinge on one end and two legs on the other. There's about six to a carriage in large compartments. They're more like native carriages than for Europeans. There was louvre windows. There was a glass window. Excuse me, Peter. Stained glass window to stop the sun glare. And there was a gauze window to pull up that would stop the mosquitoes from getting in during the night.
Were they worse than the trains you travelled on with the DLI?
Oh, it. There's very little comfort. It was a bit crowded, and
so they were worse.
Ah, yes, yeah.
Do you think that was because they were? I mean, there were African troops being carried in.
No, but these are actually troop carriages that have been there since about 50, 60 year old.
But you just hadn't got them when you were with the DLI.
That's right.
You'd been lucky.
Yeah.
And where were you going?
Calcutta. Do you want to know how long it took us? 5 days, day and night, traveling across. It's a, you know, from if you look at the atlas, you see where Bombay is in Calcutta. It's in the broadest end of the isthmus of India. It's call it the Great Indian Peninsula Railway. Still 4 to 5 days traveling day and night, just stopping to carry get take on water and coal. But when it stopped, you could take a Dixie along, get some hot water from the engine. so that we were never out without a cup of tea anyway. We had our rations with us. We ate when we wanted to. And it was rough sleeping at night, you know, in a bright position. And we had a mosquito gauze up.
How did the troops stand up to it?
Well, to tell you the truth, there wasn't much chance or anything like that, but I think everybody was a little bit, what they call, cheesed off with the length of time. But I'd done that trip before, Peter, and it was the same kind of carriages then as it was when the war was on, before the war. So I knew exactly what was happening. So the first trip I'd done...
I thought you said the carriages weren't as bad, though. Because
well, we had more space, for a start. And the other ones had a slight bit of upholstery for the seating accommodation. The toilets, of course... do you want me to explain what the toilets was like? Well, they're like wog toilets myself. You went into a compartment, you shut the door, there's a hole in the floor. There's two like imitation pads, like where your right foot, left foot on it, and you just squatted. And all excreta went on the tracks. And water, when if a train stopped for any period of time for for half an hour, I mean everybody sort of got out, and wherever there was a water faucet, which it was along the line, it coming towards a station, always before a station or through a station, never at a station, because you get crowds of beggars coming up, crawling all over, coming at the windows, bukshi sahab. If we had any scrap food, we used to sling it out. And they all used to dive, just like animals, for odd bits of biscuits, bits of bully beef left in the tins and things like that, you know. So that's why you stopped outside or away from it. But still, if they saw the engine come in and the train, you see crowds running along the track. It didn't deter them anyway. But anyway, what used to be like standard pipes with a tap on. We used to get it down to the middle, that middle, like shirts off, and take a towel and get a good wash that way. Sluice it all over. Didn't matter about wetting your shorts, because they'd be dry on you by the time you got back in the train.
So you were doing this for 5 days?
Yeah, and you can imagine what it was like. The railway track itself, Peter, that was very... the engineering, you do not see any wooden sleepers. They're all metal, made of metal, pressed half-inch metal sleepers. There are no wooden chocks you put in the chairs where the joints are from one rail to another connecting. And the expansion gap is larger than the ordinary lines in England. The chocks in the chairs supporting the rail ends, of course the fish plated as well, and I took particular notice of the travelling during the day. You know the general noise, the more silent, that was the, but at night time it got worse because they were getting cooler and the gaps were opening, you see. That is particularly there for a purpose. If they were all close together, and then the heat would warp the rails, so it kept the rails in a straight line, and the chocks were like thick oval springs, and they were knocked in. That allowed the expansion to come in and out. Marvellous piece of engineering, that, Pete, I thought.
And how did it sound different at night then?
Louder.
Same noise, just louder.
Oh, louder, because the gaps are open. Ba-bum, 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 ba-bum. And that was going on all the time, you know, thumping and thumping and thumping. And during the day, in the heat of the day, but the gaps are small. It's like tick-tick-tick-tick-tick-tick. Just being like on one of our own railway lines.
What happened when you got to Calcutta?
Well, I've been to Calcutta before. It had never altered, Peter. All them years I'd left it and came back to it. Seething with humanity, beggars by the galore, rickshaws flying up and down, people lying in the streets at night time. You're walking over them, all the stations, people are seeking refuge out of the rain or out of the heat during the night, lying just like dead people with white sheets over them. That was Calcutta. And we pulled in at a big open space. We call it a mayan, and it's a little piece of ground. It could be anywhere about half a mile by half a mile, you know. And we disembarked and got on the mayan and put our kit in order, and we had to wait there because we had another trip to go do after that, you see. But on this mayan, there were big monsoon concrete pipes. They were about three feet six in diameter, and there were people living in those pipes. Actually, living in accommodation, and you could imagine what it was like. And they were there when I left India. And they're still there when I came back. And the documentary on the BBC or one of them showing those people living in those pipes. And I was talking to Mrs. I've seen that before, and it's still the same.
Now, just one thing I want to sort out. When did you actually get to India? I should have asked you when you got to Bombay, but.
Do you know
the date?
Yes. Well, we were travelling. We were travelling at the monsoon going into 43, Peter.
So would that be September?
September 43, yes. Because it was raining during the night at times when we were travelling across Bombay to Calcutta.
So where did you go from the Calcutta Maiden?
After the fifth day, I've just explained, when we pulled into Calcutta on this mile, then this large playing field. There we got out, all our kit, put it in order, and the Africans as well, you know, and right along. We had to wait then for transport. down the river on a big paddle steamer. The Brahmaputra. The Brahmaputra River. And then from... We embarked on this large paddle steamer. There's like one deck down, one deck up. Quite a large vessel. And we packed on there, and it wasn't the only paddle steamer because they were doing trips up and down, you see. And I think I got on the second one. And even on the paddle steamer, there were Indians travelling down, you know. They're sitting there on the side. They weren't occupying where we were. They're sitting on the side, like the legs dangling over the edge, delousing themselves. And we went our destination on that paddle steamer, the Chittagong. We disembarked at Chittagong, and we was marching from Chittagong to a place called Churinga. And we went under canvas at Churinga. And well, we were there. The battalion came up short spasms, company by company. We all got together, and then from Churinga, we stayed at Churinga for about, I should think, about a week. That was our base for the time being.
And what were you doing while you were there?
Sorting ourselves out in general, getting cleaned up, getting put back into shape after the rough trip, getting organised, ready for going over into Burma. It wasn't so bad because we had plenty of space to move around in. The thing was getting all our equipment, getting it all up into order, seeing it was all clean, so we were all sorting all the ammunition out and everything, everything to do with the war that we were going to carry out in Burma, Peter. Then we, after that period, we started off company by company marching over the border.
You hadn't had any jungle training before you went into Burma then?
Just a little bit in India. Well, you could call it a bit of a jungle. It wasn't very much anyway.
And what did it consist of?
Well, occupying a hill and consolidating and holding that position until you relieved, then you came out to that was consolidation. We did that about four or five times to get that in our heads. No fires at night time. Hardly any fire during the day. That was very strict regulations, you see. I think that was a bit basic training we did on that issue. It was a hazardous trip going over the border into Burma, and on the right hand side I remember there was a little traditional thing you did. You got a bamboo leaf and you put it on this heap of bamboo leaves, you return. It was just a tradition, you know, it's a native tradition actually. Well, just got one off, put one down, that's all it was. It was quite a heap. So we first We marched we marched to a place called Tong Bazaar.
Now, did you know anything about what you were going into? I mean, had you got any thoughts about what the Japanese were going to be like, things like that?
We'd heard wild rumours about it, you know what I mean? Because we went in there when the General Brigadier Ord Wingate, have you heard of him? He was the first person to go in there to find the possibilities of supplying the troops by using dropping zones, you see, that is to it was quite successful too, but in the meantime the Chindits were being withdrawn. We did meet some of the Chindits, but they wouldn't say anything about what it was like in the jungle. We couldn't get a word out of them because they'd been brainwashed not to talk to us, you see. And they were British troops. They were British troops. But Brigadier Ord Wingate, do you remember when he was flying out, he crashed and was killed. So we had no doubts about what we were going to meet anyway. Because
before. Did the Japanese have a good reputation as a fighting soldier?
Oh, the fanatics. And before we'd reached Tong Bazaar, there'd been a British unit in there, and we were taking over there the positions there I'd left, which wasn't very much really, because you could see where they'd been digging in, and you could see where there'd been generators for generating electricity for topping up batteries, you know, small generating plants topping up batteries for silos. And that was overrun by the Japanese down by between Tong Bazaar and Cox's Bazaar, and that showed you how near they got into India. And there's several, the Royal Air Force was established, of course, and they put in several airstrikes just before we got there. And we found about that by visual means, because as we went down into Burma, we had a particular role to play, because we were doing the Narkadok sector, which is further south, and as far as the coastal sector, which was occupied by Indian troops. And we had the 5th Indian Division for our support as well. Mortars. They had howitzers, small howitzers, and they carried them in pieces on mules.
Now, what about you? You were, we know you're in the 7th Gold Coast region. What about your higher formations? What was that? Which brigade was that in?
Well. We were the 81st West African Division, and the West African Division included the Gold Coast Regiments, the Nigerian Regiments, all black troops. 5th Indian Division, of course, they were Indians.
And which brigade? Do you remember your brigade?
I forget the brigade, yes.
We can look that up, yeah.
Yeah, right, doesn't matter, the division will do.
So you took over these positions at Tong Bazaar.
We went further back, further south, Cox's Bazaar, and then we took the positions about a mile in south, that's in front of Cox's Bazaar. And Our battalion arranges its alignment on those positions first, and from there we sent out regular patrols. And then BNCO, about four Africans. Long-range patrols.
Did you do any of them?
Oh, I did plenty. More than my share.
What? How would you prepare for a patrol like that? What would you do to prepare and get ready for it?
Well, as myself, arms, ammunition, how much you're going to carry. A map, compass. And
would you just have Lee Enfield?
Yes, Lee Enfield.
No automatic weapons.
Not for patrolling. Not usually anyway. We used to go out and we used to be given a sector on the map, reference map. And we used to patrol that area to find out what it was, if there's any villages. And it was all based on intelligence then, you see, how far the Japs, if there was any in the area, where they were they, when did you see them, take all the information back, you see. That's how we do patrol.
Were they willing to tell you, usually?
Oh, yes. Cooperative. I mean, the Burmese didn't like the Japanese at all. And usually you get a Burmese intelligence NCO as well. We had two attached to our battalion. They called him one Jellicoe, the other one was Parrot. You get one of those, if it was a short patrol, you didn't. You just took your own information and brought it back.
And what was it like travelling through? Was it a jungle area?
Tracks. You follow tracks.
Was it jungle?
It was all bamboo. Mainly bamboo, thick bamboo, and high hills, razor-backed hills.
And what precautions did you take against ambush?
Well, you could be ambushed any time. Because we always had a scout in front to see if there was anything there at all before we moved up. Like a concertina, yes.
And do you remember anything particular, any incidents on these patrols?
Well, yes, as we got further down into Burma, my company in particular, well, I'm not talking about a patrol, when after you'd done patrols, the companies, we used to move up into the area we patrolled and occupied.
So you moved forward from it, is it Copies Mazar?
Of course we did. That was a static point. We started moving forward all the time until we met a lot of resistance. But apart from that, the patrols were the main things to reliance. And we could tell. I mentioned an airstrike, you know, later before, and our company. Particularly myself in the area, it was littered with Japanese rubbish that had been left behind, and it was like, and it stunk. You know, it was like going into a death pit, a smell. And well, this will tell you. You're part of a Japanese body, and I just kicked. He had a helmet on. I just kicked the helmet like that, and half his head came off inside, and was crawling with maggots. So that was it. That was done during the airstrike, and they'd left a lot of gun cotton, what they used for their little artillery pieces. Shell cases, littered, bandages, clotted bandages, and you could see that they really had it rough.
From this airstrike?
Oh, yes.
That was where you took over an old position. You didn't throw them out of it. They'd gone.
They had gone. Yes, they had gone.